CinemaJaws brought to you by the Chicago Podcast Co-op and Basecamp. When you use Basecamp to run projects, people know what to do, people know where things are, and you stay on top of everything all the time. And we thank them for their support. You're listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at Soho House, Chicago this week. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy, and sitting alongside us, as always, is our engineer and local filmmaker, Elias Rodriguez.
Thank you, guys. You are all looking dapper here today.
As are you. Even Thank Phil you. Is wearing a suit this
our
week.
Our intern, yes.
Yeah, unbelievable. We will explain why.
Yes. This week on CinemaJaw, Matt, we go lions, tigers, and bears.
Oh, my.
As we
that was
cover,
my George Takei. Did you like it?
As we cover our top three favorite animal attack scenes in movies.
I can't wait. I'm going to go Cujo on your ass.
We're doing this in honor of The Revenant.
Yeah.
Which has an amazing attack scene.
Maybe the best I've ever seen. Maybe. We'll get to that, though. We'll talk all about it.
Yes. If that wasn't enough, Jawheads, just to tease you, we have a whole lot more.
Oh, yeah, we are going eye for an eye. We are getting down on Dirty Grandpa.
And as mentioned, we are going to be going in-depth on The Revenant, giving you guys a little review.
Plus, we are at Soho House here in honor of Chicago Rot. We have one of the producers, Jeremy, is going to be coming on, going to do a little interview with us, and he's also going to take Matt on in Robert De Niro movie trivia. He has a new movie coming out entitled Dirty Grandpa, as Elias mentioned, so we'll be playing De Niro trivia.
All right, I think I might be able to hold my own on some De Niro trivia.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. Me and Matt both saw The Revenant, and we are going to get to that review.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite obvious. Me and you have seen it, and I believe most people who have seen it, and
yeah.
Now Leonardo DiCaprio has won the Golden Globe.
Sure.
He is going to get his Oscar.
I think it's a lock at this
point,
right?
It is a lock.
Yeah.
It is literally a lock. I would say this, though. It got me thinking. I was in the shower, and I thought, boy, who is the next great actor or legend that was really missing his Oscar?
And I got it.
I do, too. It just popped right in my head away. Did it for you, too? It just
absolutely.
Sort of absolutely popped right into your head. You
should
just knew exactly
who
it is.
Should we say it at the same time?
Oh, yeah, because we're talking about the same guy.
All right, ready?
Tom
Ed
Cruz.
Norton.
Tom
it's Ed
Cruz.
Norton.
Oh, my God.
Jeez, come on, Ryan. It's
Dude,
Edward Norton.
For once, I thought we were talking about the same thing.
Tom Cruise?
Yes, he deserves an Oscar.
Cinema War.
Jeremy's got his hands full here.
I don't think so. I think there's really not much in his hands on that one.
What are you talking about?
There's a lot in one hand and nothing in the other.
Are you absolutely joking? Ed Norton over Tom Cruise
for an Oscar? You're absolutely joking.
You're ludicrous at this point. My goodness.
All up in my business.
Yeah. Whew. Wait, this is a lot of fun. I first and foremost want to give a plug to the Soho House. As Matt said, we are recording here. It's a unique experience at the Soho House. They are located at 113 North Green Street in the West Loop neighborhood.
Yeah,
it's about six stories. There's multiple bars, restaurants involved. There's a theater, a boxing ring, a gym. This is a wonderful facility.
So as I understand it, it's like a members-only club for the arts.
So what the hell are we doing here?
I don't know. Well, you have to be invited, which is really cool that the Rot guys invited us to come out to their screening. It's our second time here. We were here for the black screening as well.
Yep.
But this space is amazing.
Yeah, and thanks you guys for sneaking me in the Jawbox.
Yeah, you're welcome,
hey,
man.
We didn't even
How was it? Was it tight in there with Phil?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I was going to say.
I'm still waiting to make sure. I'm looking around, make sure they don't see me and Phil.
So. We didn't just get Elias in. We also got our intern into Soho House. So.
Have you ever seen Ocean's 11? You know, the grease guy? What do they call him? The grease man? They fit him into that little box.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Oh,
it worked out.
It's a good time here, though.
Yeah, you guys are going to open the safe later, okay?
For the Jawheads at home listening, we're here because we're hosting a Q&A after two different screenings that we're having in the private screening room where people can come. It's about, what would you say, it holds about 60 people?
Yeah, 60, 70. I didn't count the seats. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And people can come up, view the film, and then me and Matt and Elias have been hosting a Q&A. First screening, we've already done it, so we thought, let's cram in a recording right in between.
I love cramming things in, Ryan.
Yeah, like me and Phil in the Jawbox.
Oh, man.
It's like one of my favorite things. So let's do it.
Yes, good times. We're going to bring Jeremy on a little bit later because we are here. It's sort of a nice lounge. It's a cocktail. People are talking. So we'll get Jeremy over here in a little while. Brings us to our first segment.
Eye for an Eye, interested or ignore? And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by...
What's going on, everyone? I'm Chris Waters.
And I'm Steven Martin.
And we are the hosts of the Good Horror, Bad Horror podcast. Don't get stuck watching a horror movie that sucks. Tune in and get the scoop on the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll also give you some behind-the-scenes movie-making facts and trivia you probably have never heard before.
Do yourself a favor and listen first with your hosts, Christopher and Steven. You can find us in the iTunes store and be sure to check out our website at goodhorrorbadhorror.com. Take care.
All righty, here we go. Eye for an Eye, Dirty Grandpa. Right before his wedding, an uptight guy is tricked into driving his grandfather, a perverted former army general, to Florida for spring break. The film stars Robert De Niro and Zac Efron. The film is directed by Dan Mazur, who is best known for working with Sacha Baron Cohen on Borat and The Ali G Show. We throw it over to Rye, interested or ignore?
This is interesting. I saw the previews, and it's a weird role for De Niro.
Extremely weird.
And I have my hits and misses with De Niro, to be absolutely honest with you. I'm not like a love De Niro by any means on his later part of his career. Early on, loved him. And then it was like, this way.
He's
I don't
taken
feel
some
that
paychecks lately.
He has. And this one feels like a paycheck. And or he was really trying to get in on that in crowd, that sort of...
He's going for the Bill Murray thing is what you're trying to say?
No, I don't even want to say Bill Murray, but I think he's, in this particular role, I think really here he's going for making a comedy that's a Judd Apatow film.
Okay.
And he's not quite getting it here. I think this film looks weak.
Well, you haven't seen it, to be fair.
I have not seen it, but I'm just saying what I've seen from the previews. And it has Zac Efron, who I'm not totally buying in the role.
But this is Sacha Baron Cohen's directorial debut?
No, it is not. This particular director worked with Sacha Baron Cohen, is what Elias said.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm giving this one an ignore.
I will go... Dude, I don't know. I agree with you. Like, De Niro has made some really crappy comedies. Although, to be fair, Meet the Parents and those two films, three films now, were fantastic. Ignore. Elias?
So this is reminding me of, what was that Seth Rogen and was it Zac Efron?
Neighbors?
Neighbors, yeah. Neighbors.
Which was not bad from all accounts.
Is this like, yeah, it wasn't too bad, but is this just the genre? I feel like there's a genre with the and James Franco brother James
Dave
Franco's,
Franco.
Yes, exactly. I feel like it's them. Those kids are really like running this whole genre that I'm not buying into. So ignore.
Wow, three ignores for Dirty Grandpa. It's funny because just last episode we just hated right along too.
Yeah, I mean, how's that related?
I'm saying early on it is so Hollywood. Early January films are always the crap. It's the leftovers.
It's the poop.
Yeah, it's the poop. It's like, well, when are you going to release this? We made it to come out in like November when everybody was going to the movies. It's not that good. Throw it onto the January schedule.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's what happens. So we give it three ignores for Dirty Grandpa. Speaking of new movies, Matt, I just have to say this. A bear, a grizzly bear, eats half of Leonardo DiCaprio's body and then craps out an Oscar statue. Matt and I hit the wilderness and checked out The Revenant.
What happened?
We did what we had to do.
He was buried right.
All I had was my boy. And he took him from me, you understand? He's afraid. Knows how far I came to find them. I done it already.
Director Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu has outdone himself once again. Last year, he won the Oscar for Birdman, and he comes right back with another strong effort in The Revenant. Working with cinematographer Emmanuel Lubinsky, they give us one of the most beautiful-looking films
no
in
relation.
Recent years. Filming completely outdoors, using nothing but natural light, they achieve one of the most authentic-looking films in cinema history. Leonardo DiCaprio plays Hugh Glass, who was a renowned fur trapper and explorer back in the early 1800s. After surviving a brutal attack by Native Americans, Hugh Glass is mauled by a grizzly bear. More on that in a minute. what looks to be life-ending injuries, he is left for dead by a fellow hunter, John Fitzgerald, played by Tom Hardy. The rest of the film is an examination of survival like we have never seen before, as Glass tries to live long enough to get his revenge. I am not sure there has ever been a film that is so beautiful and brutal to look at the same time. I also do not think I have seen an actor and an entire film crew so committed to showing us the brutality of Mother Nature. I was enthralled by The Revenant. I really loved it. My only complaint, Matt, is that after seeing it, I had already done my top 10 of 2015 because this would have been high on my list. Matt, were you his biggest fan?
Yes, I was. And I think I agree with you. This would have been on my top 10. And I got to say this. I know for a fact Quentin Tarantino, after making The Hateful Eight, was sitting in a screening of The Revenant, and he watched the whole movie, end credits roll, and he sits back in his seat, and he just looks at the screen and says, fuck. This was everything that The Hateful Eight could have, should have been, minus the dialogue.
I wouldn't say that.
Really? Because
the comparisons, they're two different types of movies.
Oh, I think the comparisons are fair. We have a winter western movie set in the northern
West. But one's about survival and Mother Nature. One's about characters.
True enough. Fair enough. But the landscapes were, I think, better.
Oh, in The Revenant?
In The Revenant.
These were some of the best I've ever seen.
And, oh my God, you're right. This is not a character piece. Really, only just a few lines of dialogue for the entire picture, which I felt was amazing. Such a macho film, and not in a misogynistic or I don't know, any sort of negative way. Macho in a good way. You know, there's chivalry, but not in, what's the word? A patronizing sort of way. Amazing. Love this movie front to back. Brutal as all hell. I mean, brutal, brutal movie. But again, not gratuitous. Like, the violence was necessary and fit in. Whereas, I can't help compare this to Hateful Eight because they're both snow westerns. In Hateful Eight, it was like, the violence was like masturbatory almost. It was like, here comes the violence. You're going to love this, you know?
Right.
But, oh, man, I love this movie. This was like probably the best Western I've seen in, I don't know, 20 years.
The best Western?
Not the hotel chain.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, but you know what the funny thing is, too, is, and I mentioned in my little recap there, is the authenticity of this film.
Well, wait a second. What sort of authenticity do you mean?
Well, I'm talking about just being in nature. We don't see nature quite captured, the brutality of it, in this regard, as we've seen in The Revenant. I mean, you realize that these guys, there's a couple of scenes where DiCaprio literally cannot survive if he couldn't get inside a carcass of an animal to survive a night.
Yeah, the tauntaun scene.
Right. I mean, there are a couple of moments where you realize how brutal it would be if you were just alone in Mother Nature, you know, out there in the winter. And we're in Chicago, so we know it. If you were out there barely clothed or you maybe had like a, you know, the
Siberia, yeah,
skin of an animal, if you will, and you were out there and you had no fire, no shelter.
Well, what I would do is cut open Phil the intern. Wow. Crawl inside his body
cavity.
He's so little.
He wouldn't suit you.
He'd be more like a hat, really.
And the other thing was the commitment between DiCaprio and the entire film crew to go through what they did. And I'm going to get to this in my pros.
I heard it was a nightmare shoot.
Oh, you know, I just got done working on a real tough director also, Elias Rodriguez's little short film. But I've been around a couple of film shoots and, you know, see everything that goes wrong. And we're here with the Chicago Rock guys, and me and Matt were just doing a Q&A, and they talk about the things that can go wrong. The little that I've even heard of, like, what DiCaprio and Alejandro, the director, we're talking about going through. If it goes wrong, this is a whole day gone because they're shooting with natural light. It's a one take, and he loves his long camera takes. They got hundreds of people working, Indians attacking, all hell breaking loose. One thing goes wrong, it's like, scrap of the day. We'll try it again tomorrow. You know what I mean? I mean, that's incredibly, oof, incredibly difficult.
One thing I feel is being overlooked in all the critiques of this film that I've read so far is the absolutely chilling performance from Tom Hardy. I really think that this is being overlooked because Leonardo DiCaprio turns in a tour de force, to use a really cliched term, but it's he's a lock for the best actor,
yes,
award. Okay, but Tom Hardy is fantastic. That scene where he talks about, and I'm not spoiling anything, finding God and his father's story about finding God. Wow. chilling.
Awesome.
Oh, the look in his eyes, it's all in his eyes. You see it in his head.
Right. And I think that comes full circle at the end when DiCaprio sort of looks at the camera at the very end of the film.
We'll have to talk about so this has got to be spoiler.
That's not giving a ton away. Not giving a ton away.
All right.
But let's get to the main scene that everybody is talking about.
The bear
attack. It is without a doubt, if you had to recap the entire film year in film, the bear attack is the best scene of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how deep I want to get into this.
Get into it, yeah.
Okay.
People know he gets mauled by a bear.
He gets mauled by a bear. Everybody knows.
Yeah, ever since the intro of the show, I know.
No, it's in the trailer. We're not giving anything away by that. But what I will, I mean, and slight spoiler alert, so fair warning, I didn't expect it to go on for as long as it did. I mean, this is not a short scene. Like, he gets attacked by an animal and then it's over. It goes on for like 5-10 minutes. I don't know. I wasn't timing it, but it felt like that much time. It was so long, and like you think it's over, and then it comes back, and it's like, holy crap, so brutal, so visceral, you know? Great scene, amazing.
And the other thing, too, is a lot of times you have at least a guess, as we see a lot of movies, you know, throughout the year, you have a guess of how it was done. This is one of those scenes where I'm not quite sure how it was done. DiCaprio had to be...
It was CG.
But DiCaprio himself had to be thrusted around. There's no way that was a CG DiCaprio getting...
Well, honestly, I don't know. That's a good question.
So it didn't look like Harry Potter playing Quidditch, just flinging around?
No.
Cheesy?
No, I mean, not
this
at all.
This was brutal.
That bear scene did not look fake at all. It looked like somebody was getting mauled by a bear.
And here's a great tale of it, too. At the very end of the scene, something happens. And I don't want to give maybe that particular away, but it sort of ends in a way. And I was in a very packed theater, and there were some people laughing, but I picked up on the laughter. It was almost nervous laughter.
Uncomfortable, yeah.
You did not know how to react because you had just saw what you had thought was a man mauled by a bear. And it was so realistic. Like, it was almost like the teenagers in the crowd were like, they didn't know how to react to it, you know what I mean? So they were laughing. That's what happens when you get nervous sometimes. You go to laughter because you think that's good. But a lot of people were covering their eyes and just like, oh my goodness.
That leads to the one criticism I have in this film was the buffalo scene with the wolves and the buffalo. Leonardo DiCaprio climbs up a hill and he sees this scene of a lot of buffalo, and that looked really fake.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
It
worked for me. I thought it was a beautiful moment.
I didn't.
No?
I thought, yeah, no. Fake buffalo. The wolves were fake. It didn't look good for me.
Wow.
The bear looked amazing. That's the only moment in the entire film that I have some criticism on. Yeah. That's literally the only moment, because every other part of this movie is impeccable. It's amazing. Such a great take on Mother Nature and the brutality thereof. Oh, man, I enjoyed this. Such a, like I said, macho and very spiritual film, too. I mean... He experiences some sort of, I don't know, visions, would you say, right? Like,
sure.
Throughout the picture, and obviously he's got a backstory that's driving him forward, and I thought it was great. You said accurate or authentic.
Authentic.
So this is very way off of the actual story of Hugh Glass.
Sure, and they're using that as like a basis.
We'll forgive
right.
that, yeah. I think don't get hung up on that, people. I've read a lot of criticisms that said, that's not even what really happened. Who cares? This is over 100 years ago at this point, like... You know, let's see a little bit of a embellished take on this.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
And another feeling I had, and it was funny because the moviegoer behind me summed it up in such a perfect way. The movie ended, and I literally felt beat up. Like, my body felt exhausted from watching this film. And the guy behind me, as the credits were rolling, says to his buddy, I feel like a pincushion. And I thought, that sums it up. I feel like, oh, I just, like, I need a beer and a massage after watching this film. It's that brutal.
It's a brutal movie, and don't let that turn you off, guys, because I think it was brutal, but such an essential watch this year.
All right, let's talk about DiCaprio's performance really quick. It's odd that we're talking, it's a tour de force. The amazing thing is he does not say more than probably 100 words throughout the entire movie.
Well, I mean, acting's not all about delivering dialogue, is it?
No, it isn't.
So Leonardo DiCaprio... coming off Wolf of Wall Street, where he had lots of dialogue, he goes to the full opposite end of the spectrum, and it's all about what he's doing with his body, his face, and just his emotion, which the level of emotion is so difficult, must have been so difficult to sustain. Like, another thing I'm not spoiling in the trailer, where he's crawling out of some dirt of a shallow grave, you know, mm-hmm. He's just, like, I mean, Jesus, I was worried he was going to pop a blood vessel. I'm serious.
I agree. It was a very intense performance. And the other thing, too, and I have it as a pro here, and I love this. It's a pet peeve of mine in movies that the heroes or the actors or whoever we're watching seem to be able to heal no matter what the circumstance was with a good night's rest, right? You see these guys all the time in movies. They're driving a car. They get hit by a train. They sleep
mauled
good.
Mauled by a bear.
They sleep good. They go chase the bad guys. This movie was so committed to the idea that he got mauled by a bear, and he was never right the entire movie. The rest of the movie, he is feeling the effects of being mauled by the bear.
Oh, yeah.
When have we ever saw that? I don't think I've ever seen that before.
I mean, he was near death's door more than once in this picture.
Oh, my goodness. And then you got when he's on the horse, he goes over the cliff. I mean, holy moly.
Oh,
this
God.
Poor guy. Unreal. Also, love the long takes. I've talked about the cinematographer here. He's the same cinematographer that worked on Birdman and Gravity. The guy's a master. He's going for 3 Oscars in a row for cinematography. And again, the long takes, it just gives that authentic look that all of a sudden you believe that you're out in the forest and there's Native Americans attacking. You believe in certain things. It adds a realism to it.
Another thing I didn't like about this movie, you just reminded me, Ryan, and I don't want to go too long on this, but speaking of the cinematography, I thought this choice was bad. During the bear scene, the bear has his nuzzle over DiCaprio's head, and he's breathing as a bear would do. I guess she, because it's the mama bear. And the steam hits the camera lens.
Oh, I love that.
You love that.
Oh, I thought it was incredible.
Hated it.
Oh, I loved it.
Hated it, because if I was there in the scene, there's no glass to steam up. It reminded me that there's this artificial window between me and the film.
Okay, I see that.
I didn't like it.
But I liked it in the sense of, like, remember, the same exact cinematographer.
They did it because they could.
No, the same exact cinematographer worked on Alfonso Cuarón's Children of Men, and that was one of the first films that did long takes and then blood splattered on the camera, which you could say the same thing, but everybody liked the blood splattering on the window, you know, on the camera, so he had that trickle effect. And he was one of the first to do it. And this, it was just, like, so cool because it was so real and it was just there. I loved it.
It did make the bear seem more real, but I didn't like it because it made the scene feel artificial and that I was viewing it through a lens, literally a lens.
Sure.
So
another pro really quick here is see it on the big screen. Me and Matt get in fisticuffs about this all the time, and I know you try to get under my collar.
I watched it on my iPod video.
Yeah, oh, I'm going to watch it on my iPod. I mean, do yourself justice. See it on the big screen. They're out in the middle of nowhere. Just beautiful scenery.
Looks great on the Apple Watch, guys.
The surround sound is gorgeous in the theater of Mother Nature. Do yourself a favor and see it on the big screen. Ride the Movie Guys grade, 4 Jaws. This would have been in my top 5 best films of the year if I had seen it beforehand.
4 Jaws.
2-4 Jaws.
Yeah.
Top 5 for
this
you?
This is a movie we're going to be talking about in 40 years. 40 years from now, we're going to be talking about this movie.
Yeah, and what's funny is we just last week had on Brian Tallarico from RogerEbert.com, and he had mentioned for his number one, he said that Mad Max, it shouldn't have happened. You know, like, they just gave this guy a bunch of money, and he went out to the desert, and he made this movie. It so goes along the lines with The Revenant, because to bring a crew out to where they were filming and do it in natural light, everything that could go wrong, it's really done by the power of DiCaprio's box office draw, because the investors know they're going to get their money back.
Agreed.
And that's why he's so important, and actors like him, like a Johnny Depp, or people who are good actors and we like, as, you know, we know they're going to give us quality work, but they're also a box office draw that are going to get, you know, money
this,
in there.
This would not supplant Mad Max, though. Just
no, I don't think it would either. I'd put it probably at number 4, right after Mad Max.
Agreed.
That's where I would put it at, so. 2-4 Jaw reviews for The Revenant. And while we're talking about the bear scene in this, we thought it would be fun, sort of a good time to talk about animal attack scenes in movie history.
Okay.
All right.
I like this.
Matt, you're getting us started. What's your number 3 favorite animal attack scene?
My number 3 favorite animal attack scene is from Stephen King's Cujo. And I am talking about the scene with the bloody St. Bernard has the two, a mom and her daughter, trapped in a car, and it is absolutely terrifying. There's no way out. The claustrophobia in this scene. I think people have forgotten about Cujo by and large, but it was a really scary movie back in the 70s,
yeah,
you know?
I think I've only seen it once when I was, like, you know, preteen, right in that.
I'm afraid of dogs, and Cujo is why, And probably this scene is the one you could point to for the
I don't even remember this particular scene.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Dude, it's on YouTube. I really recommend you check it out. I did today doing the research. It's harrowing. I mean, here's this rabid St. Bernard. And St. Bernards are so cuddly. You know, you just want to hug them. But to see his fur dripping with blood and matted, and he's got these people trapped in a car, it's terrifying.
Nice pick at number three.
All right.
I went with a fun one. And mind you, Jawheads, we had decided, me and Matt, when we say animal attack, we mean fish, shark.
No fictional animals.
No fictional, but anything, and anything of that nature.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So at number three, I wanted to go with a good shark attack, and we've talked about Jaws to death, so I did not want to use Jaws. But one of the great death scenes of all time happens with, oh, poor Samuel L. Jackson. I'm speaking of Deep Blue Sea. And this movie, I remember, I'm not a huge fan. The premise for this film is that the sharks get intelligent because they're shooting them up with something. I can't even remember.
Who cares?
Yeah, but the sharks are getting to be smart, and they're swimming around. They're killing these guys. And the scene is so fantastic because it's so shocking. Is Sam Jackson gives one of his great speeches, and he's standing right by basically an entrance to the sea. So there's like a open area there with the water, and Sam Jackson is talking to all the rest of the cast, and he's giving this big speech, and he just gets done, very motivational, and a shark comes right out and just grabs him and eats him whole.
I love that.
And it's so stunning. When the first time you see it, you're absolutely aghast. Oh my goodness, Sam Jackson is down and he is eaten by a shark. Eaten. Oh, that gives me another idea. Could go Steve Zissou.
Yeah,
he gets eaten by a shark. But my number three, Deep Blue Sea, big fan of that one.
All right, and number two, speaking of Sam Jackson, I'm going to do this, and I'm not saying it's one of the best in all of movie history, but it's just one of my favorite, Snakes on a Plane. Lest we forget, Rye the Movie Guy.
I have not seen it, so do tell me, Matthew.
Really? I mean, here's the thing. I'm leaving Jaws off the list, so I had to fill it in, and I'm going Snakes on a Plane. Sam Jackson. I'm not going to say the line because there's a swear in it, but...
Go ahead, say it, and Phil will bleep you out.
What does he say? Now I'm forgetting to get these motherfucking snakes off my motherfucking plane.
I have had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
And it's Sam Jackson, so...
It was all bleeped out. I couldn't hear you.
Yeah. Snakes on a Plane is all you need to know.
You know, it's a funny story, too. Just recently, I was listening to Howard Stern, and... Sam Jackson was on, his guest. And at one point, they were going through his career, his filmography, and Robin, Howard Stern's sidekick, said to Sam Jackson, "How do you ever get to be in a film called Snakes on a Plane?" And there was a long pause, and he said, Sam Jackson's retort was, "How don't you star in a film that's entitled Snakes on a Plane?"
Hell yeah.
He wanted to be on it, you know, because of the title.
The famous story is that they tried to change the title, and he said, "I won't be in it if you change the title."
Right.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Kudos to Sam Jackson.
Swings it over to my number two, and here's a film that ultimately I did not like. I would say it's a 1.5-star movie, but it started off with a fantastic premise, and if they would have explored more the fear of being alone in nature and with the wolves, it would have been fantastic, but instead it turned into a Liam Neeson action film. I'm speaking of The Gray. And here's the idea is they're flying in from Alaska. The plane crashes, but in a sense where it crashes and the crew survives, you know, a soft landing crash. Plane's up in flames. And the idea of being out in the wilderness and there's a pack of wolves around you and there's no house to go to. There's no rescue team around. I thought that would have been fantastic to explore. Number one, the fear that everybody would have. And it originally... I would say the first time you see the wolves is exactly what I think I would have went for the entire film. Instead, after that, it turns into bizarre. I didn't like it at the end.
Taken in the woods with wolves?
But you got basically Liam Neeson the first time sees the wolf come out of the crash. And that first time that you see it and you're like, oh my God, what would I do? What would you do if you were without protection anywhere and there were a pack of wolves? It's damn scary. And that's that first scene. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to love this movie. But... it is what it is.
It is what it is, man. All right, so we're into our number ones, and at number one, I would have had Jaws for sure, okay, guys? And this would have been my number two, but leaving Jaws off the list, at number one, Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, the greatest animal attack story of all time. I love this movie. I bring it up probably too much, But if I had to nail it down to one scene, Tippy Tippy up in the attic. Oh my God! There's seagulls. There's ravens. There's all kinds of birds flying at her face. At that point, we almost thought it was over. You know, like she's safe at this moment. She wasn't safe. Alfred Hitchcock fooled us. She gets pecked nearly to death, and it's terrifying and great. Oh man, I love the birds.
It's scary.
It is scary.
It is. That one point when they go into the phone booth and they're just hitting the glass of the phone booth.
Yeah.
Scary.
I left Zombievers off my list too, right? Just for you.
All right. Nice pick at number one. Hate to one up you every single week here on Cinema Job.
But how do you
one
up that?
Yeah. This is a great one because I have a tie at number one.
You can't do that.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
I'm riding the movie guy.
You're cheating.
I'm at the Soho House. I'm drinking beer.
All right. What do you got?
All right. I want documentary for my number one.
So pretentious, dude.
Ooh, so pretentious. But once you hear my pick, you're going to say, wow, I wish I put that on my list.
It's Blackfish.
It is Blackfish.
Oh, see, I nailed it.
This is a whale attack caught on, and there's multiple whale attacks in the movie. And this is all about whales, killer whales being held in captivity,
uh-huh.
Much like we see in SeaWorld, and they're being trained. And
that's a whale of a bad pick.
No, it is not. Let me tell you this. This is another thing that really scares me, is I'm always fearful for these trainers because they're working with these just enormous beasts. You know what I mean? They're,
sure.
They're so fragile. I mean, they just be eating like...
It's a great film.
Nothing, right? And the documentary, see it. If you have not seen it, Jawheads, it's an absolute must. Would you agree with me?
I would agree with you.
It's a wonderful film. But
best documentary of 2014, or up there anyway.
It literally does show you a couple different whale attacks, and one of the best ones is when they show it's a female trainer, and she's basically just sort of sitting on the pier feeding these two whales, and an amateur video guy is just taping her.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you see one of the whales just grab her foot and drag her into the water. And to me, watching it, I was so scared because, again, it's that idea that, like, what are you going to do with a whale? You know what I mean? And there's no one around to save her.
If Leo DiCaprio was there, though.
They are whipping her around the water like you wouldn't believe. So I gave Blackfish my number one. The one that I tied it with was a movie that I talked about, of one of my favorite trailers, Rust and Bone with Marianne Cotillard. It's a foreign film. Great, great film where she is a whale trainer, and it sort of goes on that line. So I just wanted to highlight that one as well. And this is where she's doing one of the whale shows that you see so often at SeaWorld and whatnot. And basically a mistake happens, and the whale hits the stage that they're on, and she goes down, and what happens is she starts bleeding. And the whale, as well-trained as she is, or he is, the whale, once they have blood in the water, the instinct takes over. You know what I mean? And then next thing you know, she wakes up and she's an amputee in the hospital. And your mind goes there that she was probably...
Bitten.
And yeah. It's so scary. Just
she's been bitten.
Right back to Liam Neeson.
Yeah. Well done.
One honorable mention I had, and this one came out to me, I just remembered it as we were doing the list. Let the Right One In, the vampire movie, has this great scene where a lady gets attacked by cats.
Well done. That is great.
Do you remember this scene?
Yes, I love that scene.
And I also am scared of, like, if I was in a room with a lot of cats, I would be very scared. 10 cats or more. Nah, I'll even go 7 cats. If I walked into a room and there were 7 cats, I'd be scared because of that scene.
6 cats, you're fine. That 7th one puts you over the edge.
I'm out of there.
Yeah. That is a really scary scene. I love that scene.
Oh,
it's ridiculous and hilarious and scary at the same time.
It is. Good stuff. All right, Jawheads. What we're going to do, we're switching things up. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Jeremy from Chicago Rot is going to join us for a quick interview. Plus, he's going to judge a cinema war looking at who deserves an Oscar, Ed Norton or Leonardo DiCaprio.
No. Ed Norton or Tom Cruise. You can't even remember your own horse.
Oh, boy. You're right.
Because he's forgettable.
Cruise. No, he's not.
Okay.
Plus, he's going to take you on in trivia, Robert De Niro movie trivia. We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
Cinema Jaw is brought to you by Dude Dancer. Dude Dancer is a rhythm game for your mobile device that will keep you on the edge of your seat, ready to jump up and dance. Great timing and epic combos will make Dude Dancer dance like no other. Awesome beats with epic melodies from techno, electronic, dubstep, rave, and new wave music that will leave you whistling for weeks on end. Challenge your Facebook friends or just go solo. Plus, soon you'll be able to include your own music for Dude Dancer to shake it to. Check it out on Android's Google Play Store or Apple's App Store today. Dude Dancer, we thank them for their support.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And by Food Heals Podcast. Being hailed as Sex in the City for food, the Food Heals Podcast brings together experts in the field of holistic health to teach you the best-kept natural secrets to being a hotter, healthier, happier you. They interview actors, directors, doctors, and more, like NBA star and vegan activist John Saley on healing himself and adopting a vegan diet. Director of the film Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, Joe Cross, who lost 100 pounds through 5 months of juicing. Wellness expert Kimberly Vanderbeek, wife to James Vanderbeek on Raising a Family Holistically, and her Top 10 Tips to Thrive. Star of the film Hungry for Change and mother Evita Rampart, who healed herself of ovarian cancer by juice cleansing, adopting a raw vegan diet, and learning Tai Chi. Check it out at foodhealsnation.com, and we thank them for their support.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw, hanging out at the Soho House here on 113 North Green Street in the West Loop neighborhood. We have a guest joining us, Matt.
Yes, we do. Jeremy Vranich, one of the producers and an actor on Chicago Rot. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
We had the Chicago Rot guys on now, I think, three times. And it's funny because we feel such a relation to them now, because I remember when it was first starting, like, oh, we hope for the best. And then we started to get really excited about the project. And now here we are, finally it is completed.
And I'm just waiting for our residuals. We've been on three times. You've got all this Casper mattress money. A lot of it. And I'm just waiting for the kickbacks.
They're coming.
Okay.
Just tie us into the Rot merchandise deal.
Oh.
Yeah, the action figures.
So that's how this goes. It's a back and forth.
Yeah. Okay. It's all point system.
So me and Matt were hosting the Q&A a little bit earlier, and Dorian, the director, had mentioned that what happened was you guys had sort of met in film school. Is that where you and met Dorian and Brent?
Yeah, I met the fellas over at Tribeca Flashpoint first year, and we became friends there.
And was it always your sort of intention to go into producing, or what was your sort of goal at Flashpoint, and then how did it change when you got to meet the guys and get involved with Chicago Rot?
So I went to high school at Chicago Academy for the Arts, and I went there for directing and writing. And then I went to Tribeca, and I wanted to be a weird auteur artist, and as weird as humanly possible, and be the super creative type. And then I met Dorian and Brant, and some things changed along the way, and they had this great project, and I started realizing, you know, a really great thing that Tribeca taught me, and just starting to actually do things and not just learning about doing things, starts teaching you as you take advantage of the opportunities given to you. And if you're going to succeed, you have to meld into those opportunities. You know, there's not just the perfect thing going to land on your lap, and it's not going to all just be given to you.
Except for Rye's Powerball ticket. That's a lock.
That's a lock.
Well, you know, Rye, you're rich now, so so maybe you can, buy that for yourself.
Yeah, Rye's going to buy three Casper mattresses.
I think they're about $400 million each, right? Well, it's a third of your life. You should spend the money. But anyway, so I met them. I wasn't always intending to be that. I wanted to be a weirdo, and now I'm still a weirdo, but I wear a suit.
Now, we mentioned that you're a producer, but you also appear in the film, and you are actually my favorite part of the movie, at least in my favorite scene of the film. Was it written for you? How'd that come about, and were you nervous about being in the movie as far as an actor goes?
No, you know, as far as acting, that's where I feel most comfortable. Being vulnerable, and I'm not just saying this because it sounds cool, but seriously, being vulnerable is where I feel comfortable. And Dorian, or Brant, had written the role originally for another guy actually named Charles, and then the guy dropped out for whatever reason, or it wasn't going to work out. And so I started creating the character with the guys, and I really wanted the role. And that's how originally I was brought on, was as that character. And then I also said, again, as in terms of taking advantage of an opportunity, I said, hey, that producer you got right now, he's not really cutting it. Wow. You know, I'm around a lot. Don't have a lot of stuff to do. I also have a pen and a pad of paper and access to the internet. Maybe I should be a producer as well. And so they, you know, of course, took me on those credentials alone. But anyway, that's really how it started.
And the character, just to go a little bit more in depth, is sort of a villain and a hero at the same time.
Yeah.
I think that's really fascinating. It's a great character, dude. You know, that scene in particular sort of reminds me of Boogie Nights, you know, the firecracking scene.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, it was great because Dorian hates musicals, the director of the film. He really doesn't like them. And I started in theater and in high school and did musicals, and that was sort of my background in acting before I got into other stuff. And I was in Oliver, and there was a guy who played Artful Dodger, and I wanted to be Artful Dodger, and I thought, like, wow, what a fucking interesting character. So when I read this role, I was like, that is Artful Dodger, but like the punk rock Chicago fucked up Artful Dodger. And I was like, yes. So I went to Dorian. I was like, everything about this dude needs to be, you know, larger than life, completely asexual. You know, nothing he's doing, he doesn't care if he's fuckable or not, if he's man or woman, if he's in between, you know? So, and I thought that was so interesting and fluid. And so then they started tailoring things to like just how I acted, even in meetings and stuff, because I am myself that way to a degree, just naturally. And the big joke was no one could ever tell if I was straight or gay upon meeting me. And so then they started tweaking things to that. And so then we just went kind of haywire with it. And so I think that's sort of the relationship you get out of it, was this down-to-earth spaciness, you know, and it's evil and good all at the same time.
Yeah, well, I think it's quite memorable. I think when I came out of the screening, that was like the character and scene that was like, wow, outside of the ending of the movie where it really takes a turn, you know, those two things came to me. I was like, wow, I can't wait to talk to this Jeremy about making Chicago Rot.
Oh, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, but not with not giving anything away, the ending of your character's arc too is also quite memorable and I will say violent. Yeah, great stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, did you pick up on the almost musical theater aspect of him, or?
No, I mean, not necessarily. I didn't, no.
Yeah, but, I mean, did that make it better or worse? Or how do you feel about it? Like, what was your perception of it?
Of the character in particular?
Yeah, yeah, like...
I mean, I don't know. I guess he sort of felt like a sympathetic crime... I don't want to say crime lord, but, I mean, he's like this underground figure who's...
But he was theatrical, no?
Oh, very theatrical, oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I have to say, I have to interject here, I've seen this two times now, and the first time, at that point in the film, you already introduced the main characters and the noir and the badass and the blood and all that stuff, and then your character came on, and it was another big character, and I was skeptical. I got to be honest. I was skeptical. I was like, I honestly thought they might be trying too hard with this, but then you became my favorite character because of your performance and because it was so big. And I feel like one day when the Jawheads actually watch Chicago Rot, you will be taken by... Well, the whole film succeeds with all its mix of characters, but it was a pleasant surprise to know that yours... fits so well in this whole world.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. I think the, you know, it's like a mirepoix, you know, like everything sort of fits together so well. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it was a pleasure working with everyone, and it's that blend.
So speaking of seeing Chicago Rot, because I know there's a lot of people, we've heard us talking about this for the last 4 years or so. Do you have any insight on when our fans, our listeners, can actually check this thing out, when it's going to be available?
Yeah.
And I know it's going to be a while.
Yeah. I wish I had a date. Right now, we're looking for distribution. We're in some talks right now. That's all I can really say. And we're submitting to festivals. So as soon as I know anything, I'll let you guys know.
And we'll tweet it out.
Hopefully, we'll be on here giving a very different interview. It'll be a lot of corks popping. And my shirt might be off. And of course, my dick will be out.
Those are my favorite interviews,
which the listeners won't be able to enjoy. But I'll rub it against the mic or something.
This is already a fun night, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, this is like a celebration already. Yes, it's a smaller screening room, but what a cool place the Soho House is.
Oh no, it's beautiful. I actually, yeah, too. I guess I should do my Casper moment but seriously, thank you so much to Soho. I'm sure someone might be listening. It's a beautiful space here. Please come down to Soho, Chicago. They've taken care of us, and in the screening room here, I mean, it's
so
like, I always tell people, I'm like, have you ever seen Aviator? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, you know, the guy, he's pissing in jars, and he's like sitting there watching movies, letting his fingernails grow. Yeah, we're there. We're in that screening room. A lot less piss, a lot more talent, but it's fantastic.
Agreed.
Pretty awesome. So for the Jawheads that want to find out more about Chicago Rot and follow you maybe on, do you have your own Twitter handle?
Yeah, I do. Jeremy Vranich, Vranich, V as in Victor, R-A, N as in Nancy, I-C-H. And so it's Jeremy Vranich at on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everything else.
That's easy to remember.
Yeah.
And for more information on Chicago Rot online?
Yeah, just go to chicagorot.com, and that's Rot, R-O-T, and you can check us out there. And we've got some fun shirts. You guys have just recently watched the movie. My character wears an expletive shirt. That's for sale.
Oh, so that is?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
For the listeners, I can do this. I've already sweared it, so whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, the shirt says fuck on it, and then it's like your gym school T-shirt in middle school, and underneath you where you wrote your name, instead of your name, you'd put something you're mad about that day, and you'd write it in, and you could play along with the characters.
Yeah,
so.
you could even write "fuck Casper mattresses." Let's end it on that note.
Yeah, should
great.
You have,
there goes the sponsor. Thanks,
you guys are just killing sponsors left and right. God damn it!
Damn, good stuff. All right, so Jeremy is also going to play along trivia. He's going to take Matt on in De Niro trivia.
Oh,
before
gosh.
We get there. We are to a segment we call
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won this Cinema War. And it's important because we're fighting for 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. As we mentioned, The Revenant, me and Matt just reviewed it. We believe DiCaprio will be an Oscar winner finally. So what other actor is more deserving for an Oscar? Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Yes, today's Cinema War topic, now that Leo is going to win the Oscar for The Revenant, which long overdue actor will be next? Edward Norton or Tom Cruise? Matt, you'll be fighting Edward Norton. Rye, you'll be fighting for Tom Cruise. Let the Cinema War finally begin.
Tom Cruise, really, Rye? I hope you brought a freaking fighter jet, because aside from Rain Man, what has he done to deserve an Oscar for? And don't say Vanilla Sky. Tech support!
Matt, Ed Norton is a fine actor and all, but Tom Cruise is a legend of Hollywood. He is the rare talent that is a huge movie star and a damn good actor at the same time. Cruise has had some iconic roles in his career, yet the Oscar has eluded him. He is overdue.
You did that with a straight face. The first rule of Ed Norton is having an Oscar is we don't talk about Ed Norton not having an Oscar. But I'm going to anyway. Rye, you just might have, here come the puns, some primal fear that I'm going to drag you to Supreme Court with Larry Flint and make you bite the curb. Bite the curb, I said.
Woof. Matt, Cruise would have already won an Oscar for Born on the 4th of July, but he was against Daniel Day-Lewis in My Left Foot, considered by some as the best acting performance ever. Then in 2000, he was robbed, Matthew, of supporting actor in the brilliant turn in Magnolia when he lost to Michael Caine for the Cider House rules. Oscar voters know they made a mistake there. Norton, while good, never actually deserved a win like Cruise did there.
Oh my God. Edward Norton has honestly given us nothing but Oscar-worthy performances, Hulk notwithstanding. It's just a travesty this guy doesn't have an Oscar statue yet.
Cruise's personal life may have gotten in the way of his career a little bit here, but there is more to it. Roles like Collateral and A Few Good Men and even Rain Man would normally at least get a nomination, but voters missed Cruise altogether those years. His body of work is very impressive. He deserves recognition, Matthew.
Ryan, I just lost that loving feeling. The only thing Tom Cruise is top gun of is Oprah's couch. So go slide on your floor in your underwear some more and cry about the end of War of the Worlds, which sucked, because Edward Norton is the winner of this Fight Club.
In the end, Matt, I think both these guys are great actors, but Norton does not have iconic roles in his pocket like Tom Cruise does. Jerry Maguire won Cuba Gooding Jr. an Oscar, for Christ's sake, yet Cruise still does not have a statue
that
to put
on
his mantle. Cruise's career is more prolific, and he is more deserving when he gets to his next great role. Cruise for the win, buddy. Wow. We
this
are
a
button
tough
heads.
One. This
we
is
are
a tough
button
one.
Heads. We throw it over to Jeremy.
I do not envy Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy is 9 beers deep.
Nine and a quarter.
Yeah.
In European size, maybe a little less.
We throw it to Jeremy. What did you think of the Cinema War, buddy?
Okay.
Ham it up a little bit.
Yeah. For one, didn't Norton win something for Birdman?
He did not. He was nominated, but
really?
He did not win.
He did not win?
He was nominated, though.
Okay, well, my boy Norton, he already has the clout and everything. I'm going to have to go with Rye here on this one. Yeah, I'm sorry.
My mic just cut out. Really? You're giving it to Tom Cruise over Ed Norton?
Hell yeah, he is.
Yeah,
oh
no, because,
yeah,
because that's easy, okay? Like, and I'm going to say this. Even Tom Cruise, and I'm going to start defending the physical acting shit where, like,
He had a better argument, that's why.
No.
No, it's true. I give it to him.
But Ed Norton's career is easy to be like, all right, that dude's obviously fucking talented. Everything he does turns to gold. Like, he really is fucking brilliant. But what I will say is Tom Cruise's physical acting, and I'm just going to defend this, fuck everything Rye said about the movies, his physical acting, he sells everything he does. Like, you will watch the, like, what's that movie he did? Oblivion?
Sure.
I love Oblivion.
Okay, right? So, relatively mediocre movie in a lot of respects, but anything that dude does, like sliding down a hill, throw him off a cliff, like anything, I'm buying it, right? And I'm just saying, even
but you don't think if Ed Norton was in that same exact role, it would have been better?
No,
he would have been smoking a cigarette about him, be very, you know, he would have brought the art to it, but not necessarily the physicality that it needed and deserved. And what I love is the way Tom Cruise approaches this stuff is so physical. He's a physical actor. And he does not get enough respect for that. So I'm just going to focus on that alone.
Sure.
And for that alone, I think we have to give him some props here. That was not mentioned in this debate.
I win.
You won.
And then on top of that, I will say those movies that you did list, yes, fantastic, and also great points.
Yes.
It was Magnolia. That's what won
well,
it for
well,
you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of course.
The Magnolia thing
was... Because
it's a great
point. He should have won for Magnolia. That's when every once in a while the Oscars miss one. And if you look back... He should have won for Magnolia.
No, he should have won for Born on the 4th of July.
Well, but he was again, I don't...
That was a little sappy, though. That was a hokey kind of movie, though.
Yeah. And he was going against Daniel Day-Lewis. But you go to Magnolia, Michael Caine had already won. I don't know why they gave it to Michael Caine for Cider Heist. If you look at the two films, not even close.
No, I agree.
They screwed up.
But Magnolia, absolutely fantastic. You're totally right, yeah.
That earns me 20 seconds of jaw time.
Wow, how'd you pull that one out? Go ahead.
I win again, Matthew. It's difficult. It's difficult.
Do you usually win, really?
No,
we
all.
Actually go back and forth.
Okay,
I probably have the winning record on Cinema.
I doubt that.
Whoa.
War.
Wait, is this a mommy-daddy moment again?
Oh, another one.
Maybe.
I don't know where he comes off saying that. I guarantee you I probably
I'm the only
have
one who's
more.
Got 10 in a row.
Yeah, maybe 10 in a row, but I've won more, I think, overall.
You know what? We're going to have to get the data on this.
We'll have our intern.
Hey, we have an intern. Yes, we have an intern. He can look back at this stuff.
Yeah, which, by the way, we're talking about spelling my name. Where are you from, sir, Phil? Japan?
Naperville, I guess.
Naperville.
Let's spell it for the crowd.
Naperville, Japan.
It's the Japan of Illinois. Yeah.
We ask because we had to put Phil's name on the list to get into Soho House.
Yeah.
This is where this stems from.
Yeah.
And your last name is Phil?
Fujiwara. And Phil's spelled weird, too. It's P-F-I-L instead of H.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, to be fair, I basically just put my fingers on the home row, went one row up, and just smashed them. And then apparently you got let in, so it worked out.
Here he is.
I spelled your name right.
Yes.
So not that Vranich is all that easy to spell.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I can speak to that. Yeah. I'm used to speaking this other keyboard language.
So my 20 seconds of jaw time is just on rot. Very excited for you guys. Can't wait to see it even more successful than it already is, so... Cheers.
Thank you guys so much.
Cheers.
Seriously, again.
I'm using my 20 seconds to cheers in real time, guys.
Because he's a giver.
Phil, come on. Here we go.
Phil, thank you so much.
We got Phil drinking, which is both a credit and a discredit to our...
Blame it on Matt. Blame
it on organization.
Matt. Phil's parents, blame that one on Matt. All right. It brings us to trivia, everyone's favorite segment of the show. Because we are cramped for time and other reasons, there are no clues for trivia this week.
Oh, okay.
So it's on your own.
On your own. In honor of Dirty Grandpa, which is coming out in theaters, we are playing Robert De Niro movie trivia. And what it's going to do is this. I'm going to give you a year and then 3 to 4 actors that were in a Robert De Niro movie. Okay. You just got to name the movie.
Okay.
Sounds simple enough?
Talking to me?
Yeah.
Whoa, I see what you did there. Okay.
All right. Jeremy, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, and if you get hung up on a question, you're screwed.
I'm going first.
Or if I, off the top of my head, come up with a clue.
Yes, let's do that.
Yes.
Hey,
can I phone a friend over there?
I might not know it, but...
Let's do this.
He's got the kind eyes.
That's what I want. This is fun times, yes. Jawheads. Yeah. We are going to give you guys a lifeline.
Yeah.
If Elias knows a clue, he'll help you out with the clue.
I'll try to Google it as soon as he asks, and I'll try to be vague with my clue.
I can
spot.
See your screen, though, so use your
Thanks
phone.
For being honest.
Your card hands, yeah. Hold it.
Usually we're more prepared, but there's a lot going on tonight, so
yeah.
Forgive us, Jawheads. Question number one, do you want to go first, Jeremy, or do you want Matt to go first?
Yeah, hell yeah, I want to go first.
All right, question number one, 2013, just a couple of years ago, De Niro starred with Sylvester Stallone, Kim Basinger, and Kevin Hart. Name the movie.
Oh, God. Sounds like a huge piece of garbage.
Old Timers, De Niro, Stallone.
I got nothing. Sorry.
Wow.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal. 2013, De Niro, Stallone, Basinger, Kevin Hart.
Really?
Red 2?
Well, that was a good guess, though.
We were looking for Grudge Match.
Oh. Huh.
Grudge Match.
Damn.
Do you guys remember this one? This is where they're boxing in the ring? No?
Nope.
All right.
Wait. Was De Niro like the coach? He was the guy?
No,
in the
I think they fought each other. I think De Niro.
Oh, yeah. I do remember this
De Niro
this
and
now.
Stallone wow. fought each other. Yeah.
God, that's sad.
Question two over to Matt K. Matt, 1991, De Niro starred with Nick Nolte, Jessica Lange, and Juliette Lewis.
Nick Nolte, Jessica Lange, and. I don't know. Backdraft.
You love this movie. You got a chance for a steal. Nick Nolte.
Oh, Jesus. I just blew that. Wait. Hold on. My mic fell. It's falling over towards you, Matt.
You don't know it for real?
No, I really don't know.
You'll still get the point, though.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Just talk in
Give
my
him
voice.
A point.
Can
Give
you
him
do
a
my
point.
Voice?
It's Cape Fear.
Yeah, that was it.
Yes. Jeremy gets a point. It is 1-0, Jeremy.
The assist.
Question three now is over to Jeremy. Jeremy, 2000, the year 2000, De Niro starred with Ben Stiller, Terry Polo, and Owen Wilson.
Oh, it's Meet the Parents.
Oh. 2-0, Jeremy. He's slaughtering at this point.
Yeah, killing it. That was a gimme, though.
Yeah. Question four over back to Matt K. 1989, De Niro starred with Sean Penn and Demi Moore.
Demi Moore and Sean. 1991?
1989.
Holy crap.
The first Chapo interview. The first one. Not the remake.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Whoa.
Chance for a steal, Jeremy.
Do you know it now?
That was a joke.
This is
no,
a perfect
really
time
don't.
For you to help me.
I can't think of it.
Hey, Kind Eyes, you got anything for me?
He's going to the ER. You're going to the
I
ER?
I might.
He's
so
going to
no
the
guarantees.
ER.
No guarantees here.
No right. guarantees.
All right.
Kind Eyes.
All right, here we go. Look at him.
He does have kind eyes.
Sweet pearls back there.
Thank you. Okay, so.
They're green
on
eyes.
On the spot clue here. Here we go. And I'm wearing a green olive jacket today.
Oh,
so
they're
house,
making them
fancy.
Pop,
they really bring out the color in your eyes.
They do.
So I'm drinking.
Your clue is. Your clue is it's the opposite of they are devils.
We are angels?
We'll give it to him. We'll give it to him. It's 3-0, Jeremy. We're no angels.
Yes. Close enough. Yes.
Close enough.
Love it.
3-0, Jeremy. And question five is over to him. Jeremy, 1987, De Niro, Kevin Costner, Sean Connery, Andy Garcia.
I know I should know this.
Classic. I'll even give you a clue. It's a Chicago movie. De Niro, Kevin Costner, Sean Connery, Andy Garcia.
Untouchables?
4-0, Jeremy. He's clobbering you.
Wow.
Question six over to Matt K. You need them all here, Matt. 2015.
Okay, that's recent.
Very. Give him a point or no? All right, 2015.
Just last year.
De Niro, Anne Hathaway, Rene Russo.
The Intern.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
I tried to
good.
Slip that
good.
One by. I thought people would forget about that
we
one
also
already.
Would have accepted,
I tried to.
We also would have accepted Phil as the answer. So.
Nice. Well done.
PFIL.
It is 4-1. Question back over to Jeremy. 2005, De Niro, Dakota Fanning, Elizabeth Shue, Melissa Leo. 2005, De Niro, Dakota Fanning, Elizabeth Shue, Melissa Leo.
I'm just going to say Hamlet, too, because I have no idea, but I love that movie.
Matt, any guess? Do you? I mean, you are, I mean, you used to follow Dakota Fanning's career like nobody else.
Whoa.
No, I
really?
Didn't. No.
For a little while.
Is there an internet search history we should know about?
Probably.
I'm just saying.
let's see. She was a kid. She was a child.
She was a child.
I might have a decent clue for you.
All right, fine. I'll go to the
ER. A trip to the random ER. Elias Rodriguez, what do you got this time?
All right, your clue is it is one of the most popular kids games, and it's not tag.
Oh.
So think of the other most popular kids game.
Can we split a
tag?
Point? Can we split a point?
It's not freeze tag? Hopscotch? No.
Is
Jax?
That your guess?
What is that? Two guesses? What
I want to split a point with him. Can
kids,
we both have a
kids
half?
Team.
Hey, why don't you do
jump
Matt's?
Rope? Jump
why,
rope.
Why don't you do Matt's impersonation? You got a guess?
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't know. What are we? What are we talking about here? Hide and seek? Is that?
Oh.
We give that one to Matt K.
Yeah,
yeah. It sounded like Matt K. Hey, well done,
yeah,
Matt.
All right. Still alive.
4-2. It's actually over. It's 4-2, and the last question of the game now is over to Matt. But it's 4-2.
Nice,
okay.
Nice.
So you can't win.
Safe face.
Matt, 1987, De Niro, Mickey Rourke, Lisa Bonet.
Ooh.
Barfly?
No idea. So don't even. Nope.
Looking for Angel Heart. Angel Heart.
Ooh.
Don't know it?
No.
Always leave the tough ones. Yeah.
I don't even think Mickey Rourke knows that one.
Jeremy wins this one. 4-2.
Ha. Well done, sir.
Handshake. Yeah. Handshake, yeah. Guys.
Handshake.
If it came down to a tie, we call it a jawbreaker here, Jeremy. This question would have been over to you.
Ooh.
Better De Niro Scorsese film, Taxi Driver or Raging Bull?
Wait, better, what is it?
Better De Niro Scorsese film, combination. Taxi Driver or Raging Bull?
Don't I think. Like Raging Bull, personally. Yeah.
Would have been incorrect. It was Taxi Driver. Here's the real...
Sorry.
The real jawbreaker.
You let us all down.
The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Mickey Rourke, closest to. Matt, you got a guess?
54.
Lock him in at 54, Elias. Right. Jeremy, you got a guess?
What was it?
Age of Mickey Rourke.
Oh, God.
He says 54.
I'm going to go 60.
Give that one to Jeremy. 63.
Yeah.
No kidding.
No shit.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Dude, he's up there.
Let's hear for plastic surgery.
What? He looks like a mess.
No, I know.
He looks awful.
He doesn't look 64, though.
Well, no, but he looks like a catcher's mitt that might be 64.
I wouldn't say give it up for plastic surgery by no means.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I don't know. He doesn't look his age.
No, you're right, though.
He looks like a cat lady.
He's a side. Yeah, who's the leopard guy who's or woman?
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah.
I know exactly what you're
talking about. With the whiskers. He's like that, but with no whiskers.
Yep.
Awesome.
You're the 10th life cat lady. Mickey Rourke.
Yep.
Congratulations.
And a great actor.
Yeah. And that too.
Matt, we got another Q&A to do with the Chicago Rock guys here. Jeremy, we got to thank you for coming on Cinema Jaw. We have Dorian and Brant on so many times.
Yeah, stop it with those guys.
Yeah, stop. Let's open it up to the whole Chicago Rock family.
What the hell? All right, cool.
Congratulations.
Thank you for letting me have my pants off this whole time.
By.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm surprised the Soho House didn't kick you out.
I know. And I'm just saying, Kind Eyes and Rye, they were sitting on either leg. Matt was the only non-taker, but he'll come around.
Oh, good stuff.
So you guys are great.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, first and foremost, to Jeremy for coming on. That was a total blast. And obviously, everybody's having cocktails here, so we had to drag them away a little bit from the party. But we're going to go party with them and do some more Q&As.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So thanks for all the sponsors.
Yeah, and thanks to the Chicago Podcast Co-op, who helped make that possible.
We also got to thank the best engineer in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
I got to say thank you, guys, and also thank you to the Rot guys. I feel like Jawheads, one day this is going to be an episode, and all the Rot episodes are going to be ones to listen back to after you watch the film streaming or at a film fest. You know, and I actually might want to announce every week when these guys are in film fest or when Ryan mentioned I made a film this year, maybe when I'm in film fest. But it's an honor, and it's also an honor to be invited to places like the Soho House by filmmakers like Frank Zitti, who is also on the podcast, and the Rock guys. and the progression here, and I think it's awesome for CinemaJaw, and I appreciate all the Jawheads for sticking with us.
I agree. And you know what's another great thing? And I was talking, because obviously we're smoozing with people here. I mentioned Frank Zitti's name to the Rock guys because Frank Zitti had mentioned about hooking up with the Rock guys.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. I mean,
definitely.
Oh my God. That's like
it's a super group. Wow. It is literally a super group. Wow. Ready to
I would love to see the Rock Guys wait. Gore mixed with Frank's ammunition and guns.
Wow. That is a good, that's really good combination. Stuff.
And we're going to be the ones that brought
and Jawheads, you are all going to benefit from that when these guys finally get their day.
We brokered that deal.
Yep. Yes. Also, really quick shout out to the intern. We've mentioned him a couple times on the show. Phil, a lot of help. When you're doing remotes, you need help.
This guy put on a tie.
I mean, he's in full suit and tie here at Soho. And you got to go down and get equipment. We got to set up here. It's a lot of work. So thanks, Phil. Thanks for that. Jawheads.
Can we get a picture of him while he's in his suit?
Yeah, we're going to take all four and we'll post it. If you like this particular episode of CinemaJaw, please subscribe to us on iTunes. If you already subscribe to us, write us a review. All the reviews help attract more listeners.
Yeah. And
Well, you know what? Yeah, and we're all on Facebook, so please give us a like. And if you want to talk to us directly, write us at feedback@cinemajaw.com.
And we know you like pictures. That's why you listen to a movies podcast. So check us out on Instagram. It's like a little mini movie day after day.
And if that wasn't enough, we are at CinemaJaw on Twitter, where we tweet out reviews, movie news, all kinds of good stuff throughout the week. Heck, we are at CinemaJaw everywhere on social media. Until next week, I'm Ryan the Movie Guy.
I'm Matt Kay.
And keep on jawing about the movies.